I'm going to lead us briefly in prayer for them and for the rest of our service. Right, I've called this, I've nicked this title. If you can bring it up on the PowerPoint, that would be really helpful. Yeah. So I've taken, this is the title in a book on Joshua, and the man has called it, What Can an Altar Alter? Did you get it? Yeah, because it changed everything. The erection of this monument, and it was a massive monument from what we've told here, did cause real problems. Now, I'm coming in a little bit late on your series, but nevertheless, let's go on to the next one. The people of Israel are on the edge of the Promised Land. They have already overcome the tribes that are within the western region of Israel, defeated them in battle. And in order to do that, they've taken the men of military age from the east bank, so the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, to invade with the rest of the Israelites in order that they can conquer the land. And we're now at a point where, if we just go on to the next slide, so these are coming out in different order, but never mind. Joshua said to them, you have done all that Moses commanded. This is after the three tribes have been over to the West Bank and helped Israel defeat the people who are living in there. Joshua said to them, you've done all that Moses commanded and you have obeyed me in everything I commanded. If we go on to the next slide, that would be great. For a long time now, to this very day, you have not deserted your brothers, but have carried out the mission the Lord your God gave you. Now the Lord has given you rest. So that's what he had to say to them. If we go on to the next slide, if you click it on, because it doesn't seem to be responding to mine here. Yeah, there's something very beautiful about this. I don't know if you pick up on that. Ah, okay, thank you. To have people that have... Okay. There's something very beautiful about this, to hear that these people had resolutely been following the Lord in everything that they had done. And he commends them for it. If you go back in, let's try that way, there we are. After he's commended them, he said to them, be very careful to keep the commandments and the law, to love the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, to obey his commands, to hold fast to him and to serve him with all your heart and all your soul. And it wouldn't surprise me that some of you, hearing those words, will recall what Jesus had to say about what the greatest commandments were, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and all your strength. And you'll notice that echoes what was said way back here with Joshua. And it's interesting that he warns them at this time to be careful. Because now that they've come into a period of rest and the conflict has ceased, it doesn't mean to say that there aren't going to be difficulties and issues to deal with. And that's the same when we come to know Christ and put our trust in him. It doesn't mean to say that we can't be tripped up and go astray. And it was a warning to them, be careful to keep the commandment and the law, because he's well aware, Joshua, as he's saying these things, that in the past, things have happened that have really disrupted their relationship with each other and with God, and God's wrath has fallen on them as a consequence of that. And he's calling them to watch themselves and to be careful. I was at the last day of a youth camp down in Suffolk on Friday, and they were talking about the very same thing. Whatever camp you might have been on or your kids might have been on, the chap speaking was talking about, you know, now you go back to your home. You know, you've had a great week here, but now you go back to reality and you've got to live this out. And there's difficulties and temptations when we go back to live life out of the bubble of a good bubble of a Christian camp. And he blessed the people there. And he sent them away. This is to the eastern tribe, saying, return to your homes with your great wealth, with large herds of livestock, with silver, gold, bronze, and iron, and a great quantity of clothing, and divide the plunder from your enemies with your fellow Israelites. They have become rich as a consequence of invading the other lands and the plunder that they have got from there. And we read here, the Lord gave Israel all the land he'd sworn to give their forefathers, and they took possession of it and settled there. The Lord gave them rest on every side, just as he had sworn to their forefathers. Not one of their enemies withstood them. The Lord handed all their enemies over to them. Not one of all of the Lord's good promises to the house of Israel failed. Every one was fulfilled. So we're coming really, if you have stands to sort of keep books up on your shelf, this is like the end one, which is a repeat of some of the things that were said in the very first chapter. And the story of Joshua is unfolding, that God has been true to his word and has given the people rest. And they're in a prosperous and great place. Now, Matthew Henry, who lived in the 1500s, I think, he says, though it was by the favor of God and his power that Israel got possession of the Lord, so it was a gift. Let me just, we got a color thing on here, have we? A pointer? Doesn't matter if we haven't. There we are. Is that it? Yeah. Though it's by the favor of God and his power that Israel got possession of the land, and he must have all the glory, yet Joshua thought there was a thankful acknowledgement due to their brothers who assisted them. God must be chiefly eyed in our praises or looked at, yet instruments must not be altogether unoverlooked. Do you get the gist of what he's saying there? God is doing something with these people. He's shown them great favor, but that doesn't mean to say that you forget about all the people who are involved in it, that they also should be praised. Sometimes we're super spiritual, aren't we? And somebody says, oh, thank you for that word, brother. And then they'll say something like, well, the Lord spoke through you. And there is a reality about that. But also, it's worth bearing in mind, yes, God is at work in us, but we're also working and cooperating with his Spirit as his vessels. And we should honor the people that serve and work and love and show kindness to us, because it flows out of the favor of God and his work amongst us. So let's just move on to the next slide. Joshua said to them, you've done all that the Lord has commanded. You've obeyed me in everything I commanded. For a long time now, to this very day, you've not deserted your brothers, but you've carried out the mission the Lord your God gave you. Now the Lord has given you rest. So that's the position that we find them in, on the edge of the promised land. And when they came to Geliloth, this is the eastern tribes, near the Jordan in the land of Canaan, the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh built an imposing altar there by the Jordan. And when the Israelites, there on the west bank, heard that they had built the altar on the border of Canaan at Geliloth, near the Jordan on the Israelite side, the whole assembly of Israel gathered at Shiloh to go to war against them. So we go from a position, you know, where these people had been fighting together on the West Bank, pushing out the tribes that were there, occupying that territory, bringing about the judgment that God had promised, that when their sin was full, then these things would happen. And now we find those people who've been working together in harmony have suddenly been riven apart by the building of this altar. We're not exactly sure where it is. Nobody's found any archaeological remains, as far as I know. But it was probably built on the west side of the Jordan. And the people had been clearly told that the place that they should worship the Lord and come to and pray towards was the tabernacle at Shiloh. And they gathered there, and because of this other place being set up by the eastern tribes, they decided that they must go to war, that there should not be two places where the people of God gather, there should only be one. And they interpret the building of this altar as a challenge, if it was, to the true tabernacle where people were to go. And they decide to go to war against them. Things have spiraled very quickly out of control for these folk. And we'll read about the consequences of the conflict looms, because they've gathered to go to war. I mean, we've seen a fair share, haven't we, of conflict over the past few years, and how quickly things can change from a peaceful situation to one of conflict. Sometimes it's a gradual progression, sometimes it just breaks out, but conflict looms between those on one side and those on the other. There is something ugly about human nature. The moment disagreements arise, the immediate reaction is a resort to arms. Without attempting to find the truth, they rushed to war. The Israelites made no attempt to understand. At once there was a determination to fight it out and to eliminate those they had misjudged. So I think there's some good wisdom in that, how quickly things can escalate. And we, perhaps you might have known, even in the life of a church, sometimes little things can gradually escalate into bigger things and can cause real rifts amongst people. And you notice sometimes in those situations, people can be harsh with their words. They won't get physical, or at least most churches don't get physical with each other. But they can escalate and spiral out of control. And the Israelites made no attempt to understand, this particular writer says. At once there was a determination to fight it out and to eliminate those they had misjudged. There's no mention of prayer amongst the Israelites. There's no mention of prayer for those on the East Bank. No call for mediation. No time to wait. No pause to consider emotions. Because we know, don't we, that sometimes there are emotions set in motion, aren't they? A series of actions and words and attitudes that can be divisive and destructive amongst God's people. And this is a situation we find them in. Because there's one place to worship, one Lord, one God, and there are to be no rivals. And so when the people on the West Bank see these folks setting up this huge altar, they see it as a direct contradiction of all that God has established amongst their people. So, eventually the Israelites, people on the West Bank, sent Phinehas and a delegation. And two of their questions, how could you break faith? How could you turn away from the Lord? And then they recall two historical events with all the dangers. How could you break faith? Now, the people that he's talking to here have no sense or have had no will to actually break faith. They haven't built this altar to cause trouble. They've built it to show that those of them on the East Bank are united with those on the West Bank, that they are actually one people, even though there's a river that runs between them. For some time in the past, I was part of a group that did work both here on the mainland and on the Isle of Wight. Over the years, you notice what a division the Solent brings to trying to do organised activities between two, which sometimes feel like two different countries, two different places, made worse by the increasing ferry costs that there are between the two. And there was a sense that as the people on the East Bank viewed how the future might pan out, they saw the Jordan as being part of what might be a separation between the two of them. But they hadn't done this to vie for with the true tabernacle, which was on the other side of the river. And so they then... So they then recall certain events in their past. Now, the sin of Peor. Do you know what the sin of Peor was? Okay, that's fine. That was when the people of Israel were seduced into intermarrying with the Moabites. And one particular guy amongst the Israelites took this Moabite woman into his tent. And everybody knew what was going on, the sexual immorality. And Phineas was the guy who went in and put a spear through the pair of them as they were intertwined, it seems. And as a consequence of that, there was God's wrath broke out against the people. And it didn't just hit the individuals that were the nub of the problem. The repercussions brought God's wrath on the whole nation. And he brings that back to mind because as they're talking, as Phineas is talking with the people on the East Bank, he mentions this, the sin of Peor, because it nearly brought about the destruction of their community. Many died as a consequence of what happened there. And it's important to recognize that right, if you go right the way through to the New Testament, Book of Corinthians, there were a couple in that church who were having relationships with each other, and they were concerned that that would spread through their community, that that one sin would affect all of them. I don't make bread. Do any of you make bread? Some of you do. Okay. So you'll know that you only need a little bit of bread and yeast in the bread, and pretty soon it's permeated the whole. That's correct, isn't it? Yeah. You leave it in a, if you've got a posh oven, you leave it in there to, what's the word for it? Proof. Oh, to prove. And so these sins, sin of Peor, threatened the stability of God's people and their standing with God. Achan, maybe you know him better, he went in with the attack on Jericho and he hid for himself certain precious objects from that, even though everything was to have been burnt. And as a consequence of Achan's sin, when Israel next went to fight, they lost the battle, and they'd never lost battles before in the conquest. And they had to make an investigation into what had gone on, and they gradually went through the tribal peoples and found out that Achan had taken some of the goods from that place, contrary to what God had said, and judgment fell on him and his family, and God's wrath broke out against them. And as they're viewing the eastern side and the western side, they're concerned that the building of this altar will spiral into God's wrath descending on them. And so they've got questions about why this altar is being built. They said in verse 22, "This let Israel know, if this has been in rebellion or disobedience to the Lord, do not spare us this day." Notice this, that if God sees this as rebellion and disobedience, then he shouldn't spare them. Verse 23, "If we've built our own altar to turn away from the Lord, may the Lord himself call us to account." These are pretty strong words, aren't they? I mean, they haven't built this with a clear conscience, but they're open to the possibility that there might have been some rebellion or disobedience deep down in their thoughts. And they're calling upon God not to spare them if there is rebellion and disobedience there, and the Lord would call them to account if indeed they have turned away. But then they say, verse 24, "No, we haven't done this out of rebellion or disobedience. We've done it for fear that someday your descendants might say to us, 'What do you have to do with the Lord, the God of Israel? The Lord has made a boundary between us and you, you Reubenites and Gadites. You have no share in the Lord, so your descendants might cause ours to stop fearing the Lord.'" So they're looking down history and they're just wondering, this event, what it might cause in their nation over the coming years, that the river that runs between them might become more of a wall that keeps the two groups from interacting with each other and from worship together at the place God has called them to worship. They haven't done it out of rebellion. They haven't done it because they've turned away from God. And because of this possibility that actually this might cause a division amongst the people of God, they said they'd build this altar not for burnt offerings, but to be a witness, verse 27, "between us and you and the generations that follow, that we will worship the Lord at his sanctuary." Then in the future, your descendants will not be able to say to ours, you have no share in the Lord. So you might need to reread some of this. I've had to read it a few times myself to realize that this altar was being perceived as an alternative place of worship to the true place of worship. But notice also that they're looking to the future to see and perceive that their actions in building this altar is meant to unify them and bring them together, not separate them. And we said, if ever they say to us and to our descendants, we will answer, look at the replica of the Lord's altar. It's not for burnt offerings, but as a witness between us and you. Far be it from us to rebel against the Lord and turn away from him. Now, when Phinehas, who's part of the delegation that has gone to them, and the leaders of the community, they were pleased what Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh had to say in verse 30. And Phinehas, son of Eleazar the priest, said to Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh, today we know that the Lord is with us, because you've not been unfaithful to the Lord in this matter. Now you have rescued the Israelites from the Lord's hand. Then Phinehas, son of Eleazar the priest, and the leaders returned to Canaan from their meeting and reported to the Israelites. And they were glad to hear the report and praised God, and they talked no more about going to war against them to devastate the country. This statement's by Joshua. He makes three speeches in these last three chapters. There we are. Today we know that the Lord is with us because you've not been unfaithful to the Lord in this matter. Because they had thought they'd been unfaithful. And if part of the nation of Israel had been unfaithful, God's wrath would come against them. They thought of going to war against them in order to stop this. But once they sent a delegation and talked it through with them, they found that the people there had done these things in good faith, and that they talked no more about going to war. I find that little phrase, they talked no more about going to war, because in the lead up to this, I guess there have been all sorts of discussions. And sometimes when there is friction in amongst a group of people, talking about the things more and more escalates the issue, makes it more prominent, when you actually want the opposite to occur. And at this point now, because of the delegation that has come, they talked no more about going to war, and we find them being pleased and glad to hear the report and praised God. And the final verse of our reading, they gave the altar this name, a witness between us that the Lord is God. Let me just carry on. Let's just skip. Because it's interesting to note that the Reubenites and the Gadites have been on the east side because they saw that it was suitable for livestock, and they've been given permission to use it. This map I should have put up earlier, but there you get a feel for where these various tribal groups were. So there's the half tribe of Manasseh up in this northern area of Israel. It's on the eastern side of the Jordan, which runs down the middle here. Here's the tribe of Gad's land. Here's the tribe of Reuben, his land. There's the other half of the tribe of Manasseh, etc. So these are the three ones that are being addressed here. And eventually will be some of the first to be invaded in later centuries, or decades, I should say. Let me go on here. There's the map again. Okay, sorry, I've gone one too far. So what do we take from this? It's not the easiest of passages to look at. That's my experience of it. And sometimes when we have a narrative and historical events, it takes some time to get your heads around it. But it's quite clear here that the people had a real issue, that they resolved wisely, that they took counsel with the people on the east side, and through that came to a resolution and understanding of what that altar was there for and why they had done it. And they came to a peaceful conclusion. And actually, they saw through these events that the Lord is with us because the thing that could have caused conflict and death and carnage in their region had been put aside because of the actions of Phinehas and the other ones of their leaders. And this event, rather than bringing separation, brought them together and caused God's people to live at peace and no longer talked of conflict and war. And perhaps, you know, as we consider ourselves, just think about some of the relationships we have. Sometimes there are little things, aren't there, that have repercussions down through the years. So I was one of the pastors or leaders in Alverstoke Evangelical Church. And every so often I'd meet people where there had been an issue like years ago and they'd not spoken to each other for the next 9 years. You know, somebody had said one thing and it had just never got forgotten, but that would have affected everything in their lives from that time on. I've heard of a wedding taking place and I don't know what they disagreed with, but as a consequence, half the family never turned up to the wedding. And sometimes little things, don't they, go wrong or things are said and we grasp them and hold them. And they shape our lives and the lives of our community in ways that are harmful and detrimental to the health of God's people. But gladly, in this occasion, by God's grace and God's work, the people found peace and blessing and rest in the land. Well, we're going to finish by singing By Faith. Is that right? Yeah. By faith, and a reminder that all that we do, we seek to do through trusting in the Lord Jesus Christ, in what He has done, for ultimately He has made